This Star News Media podcast is presented by North Chase Family Dentistry. Open evenings, Saturdays, and they probably take your insurance. Visit them on the web at northchasefamilydentistry.com.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Cape Fear Unearthed, a podcast from Star News Media. I am your host, Hunter Ingram, and I'm a reporter for the Star News here in Wilmington, North Carolina. When you're not listening to me talk about history on this podcast, you can read my byline on coverage of the city, the local film and television industry, and my weekly TV Hunter column. This week, we're going to grab our shovel and dig into another story from the Cape Fear history books of persisting legends, historical oddities, and mysterious figures. As always, I'm going to share with you the story as it has been passed down through history and told through legend. And then I'm going to bring in someone from the community with knowledge of our tale to discuss the impact of the story on the region and whether or not history can be trusted. So settle in for this episode of Cape Fear Unearthed as we visit the watery grave of the blockade runner Fanny and Jenny and hunt down General Lee's golden sword. Two days before the Christmas of 1985, the National Park Service gifted the Lower Cape Fear River a new distinction. Now known as the Cape Fear Civil War Shipwreck District, southeastern North Carolina's section of the river was recognized as the largest graveyard of Civil War vessels in the world. Among the shipwrecked bones that lay static on the riverbed are one Confederate ironclad, the CSS Raleigh, and a number of Union blockaders. But most are blockade runners, which were thin, stealth, fast-moving steamers designed to slip goods past enemy forces guarding valuable ports during the war. As the war raged on, Wilmington was one of, if not the most, important port to the Confederacy. And with resources from allies overseas vital to the cause, blockade runners were key to its strength. The failed missions of blockade runners litter not just the river, but also the coast, where even more wrecked remains are lodged in the sand, preserved by the salt water that washes over them day in and day out. But would you believe there could be valuable treasure buried among the remnants of these ships? Legend tells of one such story. The Fanny and Jenny is said to rest only a couple hundred yards beyond Crystal Pier in Wrightsville Beach, where it inadvertently ran aground on a sandbar on the night of February 9th, 1864. How the vessel ended up there, however, is to say nothing of the one-of-a-kind piece of history allegedly stowed away on board. But we're getting ahead of ourselves. Commissioned in 1847 in Blackwell, England, the ship was originally christened under the name the Scotia, a 727-ton sidewheel steamer measuring more than 200 feet in length. It wasn't long before she caught the eye of the Confederacy, who used the Scotia twice, before she was caught by the Union while trying to breach Charleston in the fall of 1862. Auctioned off by the Union in the North the following year, the ship was purchased, only to be sent back south to make another go at blockade running. Only this time, she would do it under a new name, the Fanny and Jenny. The new assignment would prove to be short-lived. The Fanny and Jenny was en route to Wilmington from the Bahamas on its first mission when it met its fate near the coast of Wrightsville Beach. The ship is said to have been searching for a place to anchor, pushing parallel to the coast in the dark of night when it hit the sandbar. At first light, the nearby USS Florida caught sight of the ship and sent sailors to raid the Fanny and Jenny, capturing a couple dozen Confederate crewmen in the process. In the chaos, the ship's captain, whom many believed to be Lewis M. Coxeter, was said to have drowned along with other crew. That is now believed to be a lie, told by Confederate forces so the captain could make his escape. The capture of the Fanny and Jenny wasn't an especially notable victory for the Union. Its cargo was not rich in goods or supplies, only a hefty share of coal. But according to the captured crewmen, who relayed the message to Captain Crosby of the USS Florida, a gold-mounted, possibly jewel-encrusted, sword meant for General Robert E. Lee from his allies in England was being carried on board. Any efforts to find it, however, would soon go up in flames. The USS Florida crew intended to salvage the Fanny and Jenny by pulling it out to sea. But as the rescue mission was underway, Confederate soldiers positioned on the nearby shore began firing at Union forces. unable to get enough cover to successfully dislodge the ship. The crew set it and another vessel stranded nearby on fire to keep them out of Confederate hands. That night, from the embers of the charred wreckage, the legend of the Fanny and Jenny, and more specifically its fabled cargo, was born. In his book, Stories Old and New of the Cape Fear Region, local historian Lewis T. Moore detailed his efforts to find proof of the sword's existence by going directly to the source in the United Kingdom. In 1955, he sent letters to the Queen's country, asking newspapers and libraries to search their records for the origins of the missing sword. They all responded with regrets, having found zero evidence in support of the legend. Today, if the tide is low enough, the pieces of what is believed to be the Fanny and Jenny can be seen poking through the water, where it has set for more than 150 years. Every blockade runner now frozen in the sand along the coast in the Cape Fear River played a role in the most brutal chapter of our nation's history, and each has a story to tell for it. But it's easy to see why the Fanny and Jenny stands out among the doomed fleet. Where is the sword? Is it just a legend created to keep the Union forces interested in the ship and therefore in the crosshairs of Confederate soldiers? Or is it hidden away among the remains of the ship, just waiting to be found? A century and a half of divers have taken their shot at scouring the wreckage for a glimmer of hope, and all have turned up empty-handed. Or should we believe other stories of the ship's captain attempting to flee with the sword only to drop it overboard? If so, the prized possession may not have gone down with the ship, but instead sank in the sand just a few feet away. The best part of any good treasure hunt is always just that, the hunt. So maybe the endless search for the gold sword of General Lee makes the Fanny and Jenny story better, especially if it's never found. Joining me now is Chris E. Fonville, Jr., an author and professor emeritus in the Department of History at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington. He is recently retired, and he joins me today. Thank you so much for joining me, Chris.
Thank you for having me, Hunter.
So we're going to talk about the Fanny and the Jenny today. And you've done extensive research on this one, but I'm curious, you know, there's so many stories of blockade runners kind of meeting their end off the coast and along the Cape Fear River in our area. How much research and or how much information is there out there about this specific one? I'm curious if there's a lot.
There's a lot of information about blockade runners in general and blockade running at Wilmington. There's not as much information on any one ship as any one historian would like, but we know quite a bit about the Fanny and Jenny.
Is it because of its cargo, or is it just because of, you know, what it was, blockade runner?
Well, the attraction to the story of the Fanny and Jenny, of course, concerns the fabled gold, jeweled, encrusted sword that was being imported through the naval blockade on the Fanny and Jenny for General Robert E. Lee.
I would think you'd call that a very subtle sword, the gold and jeweled.
I like it.
But, you know, I was reading a story that you did for Wrightsville Beach Magazine a couple years ago, and you did some very extensive research, not only about its time as the Fanny and the Jenny, but also its kind of missions before that as the Scotia. And so it definitely has a history to it, and, there, you know, it had a number of missions before it, but this was kind of, if I'm mistaken, it was one of its only as the Fanny and the Jenny before it was burned.
It was the only run as the Fanny and Jenny. Yeah. Built in England as the Scotia in 1847, so it had been a mail packet steamer for many years before the Civil War, and then converted and then actually captured as the Scotia off Bulls Bay, South Carolina in 1862, and then sold in an adjudication court up north and purchased by a guy named John Adderley, who was an investor, shipper, merchant from London and had operations in Nassau. And he purchased the former blockade runner Scotia and then eventually turned it back into a blockade runner, renamed the Fannie and Jenny.
Absolutely.
But she only made that one run trying to get into Wilmington when she ran aground off Wrightsville Beach.
Maybe that adds to the story as well, that it was, you know, similar to the Titanic or something like that. You know,
one and done. Yeah.
The one and done. So, you know, there is some dispute about where she actually is now. There's a few blockade runner remains out there, you know, within each other at Wrightsville Beach. But what are some of the theories about where she's at?
Okay. Well, there are more than 30 blockade runner wrecks at or near the mouth of the Cayfear River. It's the largest assemblage of Civil War wrecks anywhere in the world. And it's also a testament to how prolific the blockade running trade was at Wilmington during the Civil War, which, of course, kept the Confederacy fighting for far longer than it otherwise would have. There are three wrecks off of Wrightsville Beach, and they're all on the south end. And believe it or not, they all ran aground within a five-day period in February 1864. So you've got the Emily, sometimes called the Emily of London, the Dee, and the Fanny and Jenny. And according to the journal of a guy named William Keeler, who was a paymaster on board the USS Florida, that was a blockader that was involved in the attempt to pull the Fanny and Jenny off the beach, and then in her destruction when Confederate shore parties showed up and started firing cannons and muskets at the blockader. He said that the Fanny and Jenny was the southernmost wreck on Wrightsville Beach. They were all within about a 600-yard stretch, and the Fanny and Jenny was the southernmost wreck, which would put it just north of the rocks that's on the north side of Masonboro Inlet.
So how far out from the shore are we talking?
Well, it varies. Of course, the shoreline moves, but not far. Only a couple of hundred, maybe 300 yards offshore.
And, you know,
very accessible.
Exactly. And that was my other question. How accessible are these? Because in your story, you spoke to someone who actually works here with archaeology in Wilmington or in this region that said that he dived one of those remains as a kid.
Yeah. Billy Ray Morris, who is the director of the Underwater Archaeology Branch at Fort Fisher, grew up on Wrightsville Beach, and he dived the wreck that he was told by old timers was the Fanny and Jenny. More recently, a couple of years ago, a storm actually uncovered the wreck, because, you know, periodically these wrecks will be completely covered by the sand, and then a hurricane or a nor'easter will come along or whatever and uncover them. They'll be exposed for a while, then they'll be covered back up again. So they kind of come and go. And a couple of years ago, a wreck just north of Masonboro Inlet was exposed, and a surfer took some great underwater film footage of the wreck that we suspect was the Fanny and Jenny.
It's definitely hidden out there, and then it's not. You know, it'll appear, and then it's gone. It's almost mythical in that way.
Right. Like the footage of the Bendigo off of Holden Beach from a few months ago.
Which was some really incredible drone footage.
Phenomenal. And the entire wreck was completely exposed. But you know what? By the end of the summer, it might be completely covered up again.
Exactly. But there is evidence to suggest that the Fanny and the Jenny is still out there.
She's definitely
out there.
The remnants of the Fanny and Jenny are still out there. She was burned by Union forces. You know, when she ran aground, they actually attached the officers and crew of the Fanny and Jenny once she had run aground. And this is the early morning hours of February 10th. They tried to, they escaped ashore, most of them, some of them drowned. Union gunboat, the USS Cambridge, moved in, and the USS Florida, and they tried to attach a hawser to the wreck and then pull her off. Because ideally what you want to do is capture the ship.
Salvage it and use it for yourself.
Right. Then you can, you know, sell the cargo, and the captain and crew of the capturing vessels received proceeds from the sale of the cargo, and then the ships were sold, and oftentimes the U.S. Navy purchased the ships and then turned them into speedy cruisers to chase speedy blockade runners.
Well, and that's what happened to her when she was the Scotia, correct? She was right. captured and then resold.
Exactly. And as it turns out, a private interest, mm-hmm. John Adderley, bought her and turned her back into a blockade runner.
Yeah.
So, but that was unusual. Usually the United States Navy got him. Like the blockade runner Advance, which was North Carolina's blockade runner, that made 17 successful runs through the blockade before being captured in September of 1864. And then the U.S. Navy got her and turned her into the USS Advance and then the USS Frolic. So that was not unheard of at all. So the Fanny and Jenny was unable to be captured and pulled off the beach because Confederates from Fort Fisher with cannons and rifle muskets showed up and fired on the Union crews that had gone aboard the blockade runner to try and salvage what was on board and then pull the ship off.
Yeah.
So they drove the Union sailors back to their ships, and so the Union vessels fired on, bombarded the Fanny and Jenny, et cetera, on fire.
So where did this legend or this element of the story where, you know, when they were on board and looking for the cargo, they happened to miss this very, very expensive sword, you know, where is there evidence, I guess, or kind of, where's the origin of the story of the sword being part of the Fanny and the Jenny story?
The story goes back to the day that the Fanny and Jenny was captured. Union sailors captured some of the crew before they could escape ashore. The guy they really wanted was the captain, whose name was Lewis Coxeter.
Okay.
He was on their 10 most wanted list. He was a notorious blockade runner, very successful. That's the guy they wanted. And the initial report was that he actually drowned trying to make it to shore. In fact, he had not died. That was a bit of disinformation that the Confederates put out so that Union naval authorities would back off trying to find him, was dead. But anyway, some of the captured crew of the Fanny and Jenny told members of the Cambridge and the USS Florida that one of the items on board the ship was this gold, jeweled, encrusted presentation sword that was being imported through the blockade by admirers and friends of General Robert E. Lee. So the story started the day the ship was captured. And I think that adds a lot of credibility to the story. If the story had come up 50 years later, 75 years later, that would have been one thing. But it started the day the ship was captured. And that is noted in the official naval records of the Union and Confederate naval operations during the Civil War.
Well, and, you know, like you said, adding credibility, when it's part of the story, when the story is still fresh, it definitely means that it's probably still on people's minds, and there might be a little panic that that very, very expensive sword just went down in flames. In this story that you wrote a couple years ago, you mentioned that, you know, several local historians, Lewis T. Moore, one of them, you know, very famous with stories old and new of Wilmington, the Cape Fear, you know, they dug into the manifests and the records trying to find out if the sword was real, you know, even going back to London and see if there were any records. Have you found any records besides the ones that, you know, these manifests that suggested the sword was in fact real?
No. In fact, I do recall reading that Lewis T. Moore said that he had made inquiries and maybe even traveled to England.
Yeah, I remember reading his book, and he does mention that he at least made the efforts to contact people in England to kind of get these records.
Without success.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, the only mention that I have of it is from William Keeler, the paymaster of the USS Florida's, mentioned that you know, that the sword was on board the vessel, according to members of the crew of the Fanny and Jenny. And it's mentioned in some correspondence in the official records of the Union and Confederate Navy during the Civil War. But that's it. But they never found the sword.
Yeah.
And according to Keeler's account, Captain Coxeter of the Fanny and Jenny, as soon as the ship ran aground and Union blockaders showed up, he ran to his cabin, grabbed some belongings, including the sword, and that as he attempted to get into a gig, a small boat to be rowed to shore, he lost the sword overboard. But remember, the Confederates also put out the disinformation that Coxeter had died.
Yeah.
So my suspicion is that Coxeter actually survived. If the sword was on board the vessel and accessible to him, that he got it ashore. What happened to it after that, we don't know. It was never presented to Robert E. Lee.
It's very cinematic.
Was it lost in the ocean as Coxeter, you know, tried to make it to shore? Or did he keep it and then, once he made it to shore, keep it for himself? We just don't know.
It sounds like a movie where, you know, the hero's about to get away with the treasure and you're about to be very excited and then it falls overboard. And then you're like, oh, we have to keep going.
Yeah.
But there's that sword there. So, I mean, has there ever been any dives that you know of, like professional dives, to this wreckage to, you know, treasure hunters maybe looking for this sword?
Oh, people have dived looking for the sword for 150 years. The underwater archaeology branch at Fort Fisher has dived on the wreck and taken measurements and photographs of the wreck. So, you know, there's been an archaeological record made of the wreck, the remnants of the wreck. But yeah, no, people have been searching for that sword for, you know, 150 years. And who knows, you know, maybe one day you'll be walking on the south end of Reitzel Beach and lo and behold, it will have washed out of the sand.
Be a heck of a discovery for someone.
Absolutely.
So do you believe this sword?
And if I find it, no one's going to know about it.
There you go. Yeah. So do you believe the sword was real based on your research?
Yeah.
You do?
I do.
Goes back to that night.
Had the story popped up 50, 75 years later, I wouldn't have given it much credence. Mm-hmm. But the fact that members of the crew told Union sailors at the time of the capture that the sword was on board the ship makes me think the story's true.
Yeah. Well, now that you're retired, you have plenty of time to go treasure hunting at the Fanny and the Jenny wreckage.
Let's go.
There you go. Chris, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Hunter.
That's it for this week's episode of Cape Fear Unearthed and the story of the Fanny and Jenny. Thank you so much for joining me. Check back next Thursday for a new episode where we will explore another tale from the history books. Until then, we want to hear from you, the listener, about what story you think we should cover on a future episode. Be sure to email us your favorite local tale to capefearunearthed@gmail.com. The final episode this season is going to be a reader-submitted topic, and it could be yours. Also, be sure to share your thoughts on this week's episode on Twitter with the hashtag CFUnearthed. You can also join our Facebook group, where I will be posting extra content like pictures pertaining to each week's episode and more as the season progresses. You can find that group by searching Cape Fear Unearthed on Facebook. Finally, you can find a list of all the books, articles, and resources used in researching this podcast in the show notes. That's where you will also find a link to Chris E. Fonville Jr.'s work on the Fanny and Jenny. Cape Fear Unearthed was written, edited, and hosted by me, Hunter Ingram. You can find more of my work at starnewsonline.com and on Twitter at HunterIngramSN. Until next week, get out and explore the Cape Fear region on your own. What you learn might just surprise you.